I've never told you before that a technique was important without you finding out that the thing at least worked. And what I'm going to tell you in these next five lines is sufficiently important that you're going to wonder why we ever pretended to have a science of the mind before now. What I'm going to tell you in these next five nights in relation to Dianetics, as Dianetics was in relationship to psychoanalysis. I know that sounds like a terribly exaggerated statement, but it's not. Because many things have been found and established. A new method of running has been discovered. Thought, emotion, and effort, counter-thought, counter-emotion, and counter-effort make up a package, you might say, of knowledge, a bundle of knowledge, which we have to have. But in addition to this, the behavior, the what is it that gives you thought, emotion, and effort, quite importantly, has been undetailed. Now, the thought, emotion, effort, yes, we know these exist, but how are they recorded? How do you hold on to them? And how can you get rid of them with speed? It gives us a brand new pattern for a tone scale. It's the same old tone scale. We've got something new now to put on it, something more fundamental, much more basic than we've had before. As far as the axioms are concerned, they are all exactly in place. There's not one single thing changed about any axiom since October. They're all there. Only there are two axioms earlier. Two new axioms earlier than this. They are so new that I haven't codified them into fancy scholastic language. I just sort of say a rump, rump, bump and describe it, and that's the axiom. Now, as far as an advance of knowledge is concerned, an advance of knowledge has been achieved. We were able in the past to treat what we call the messed body. We're able to make it better, de-aberrate it to a large degree, make it physically more able and well, but there's something else. Are you it? And the answer is no. Well, now, I wouldn't even begin to adventure to tell you people anything about the theta line or the theta body that I couldn't back up and that it wasn't easy to back up out in the public. And what I'm going to tell you is very simple to demonstrate to any preclear. What has been discovered, specifically, is the way you differentiate between the messed body and the theta body to your own satisfaction, to your own complete satisfaction, with considerable speed. I think that's important. Because you have implants that tell you your theta body is inside of you. It's not. You have implants that tell you that you are constructed this way and that way and so and so and so and so. You're not. And how easy is it for you to disentangle yourself from this misinformation? It's easy to the tune of about 10 minutes of processing that fast, because there is a type of incident there. Now, we talked in the past about entities, about people having one sector of their body responds to female, one responds to male, and one responds this way, that way. What are these things, and how do you get rid of them? Are they really people? What are they? Well, I found out what they were and how you get rid of them. They're synthetics, and they are the result of all of your past sins and crimes. But very simple, very easily explained what they are. Now, These techniques are divided up into two spheres of knowledge. Technique one is actually what we're calling technique 80. Technique 80 specifically is the magic button for which psychoanalysis searched for an awful long time, and they didn't find it. They found it maybe once every few hundred cases, or maybe once every 100 cases or 200 cases. Suddenly, they would address some case and they would say, "Why did you drown your grandmother's kittens?" And immediately, the fellow would get well. I mean, all of a sudden, the atmosphere would clear up for him, and he, after that, wouldn't be worried about himself, and he'd extrovert. The lights, you might say, in his life would go on. How would you like to turn on the lights in anybody's life? Maybe an hour, maybe 2 hours, maybe 5 hours, 12 hours, or 20 hours of processing, but no more than that. Now, that technique 80 is differentiated from technique 88 for this reason. It is a mechanical process. And it has certain definite specific mechanics which are applicable to any body of incidents or any theory or concept. So that you have in technique 80 something that can be applied to this life only. If you want to be dull enough to process this life on somebody, you do have pre-clears who come in light on the couch and say, "I've got to run a prenatal." Oh, you'd let them run a prenatal. And then swing technique 80 in on them too. And this is, they protest at this. "Oh, no, well, what I want to do is run an engram." And you say, "That's fine, you run the engram." "I run the engram. Now run this." And they say, "It's not there. It's not there. It's not there." And you say, "Well, go on, run the engram. Now run this." And the fellow says, "Gee, I feel different," you say. "Something has happened." Now, you know these cases that are terribly occluded? And that, colloquially speaking, don't know from nothing on recalls? You send them, you say, "Go on back down the time track." They say, "What time track?" You say, "What did you have to eat for breakfast?" They say, "Breakfast? Breakfast? Breakfast?" "Yeah, I eat breakfast, I'm sure." You say, "Now take a look at your best girl." It's all black. No motion. Nothing rewards your activities and endeavors. And then there's this thing called the wide open case that is completely wide open, has sonic, visio, tactile, somatics, has everything. And when I mean a wide open case, I mean a case who has all those things and is below two. And you tackle this case, and what do you have in your hands? You have actually somebody who is just a borderline of being a screaming psychotic if they're wide open cases. Just this borderline case. And if you don't process them right, they kind of have tendency to spin some. And you say, "Well, it must be dub in." And it really isn't dub in. What is this case? What makes it that way? And why is there the occluded case? And why is there the wide open case? And why is it the occluded case seems to have some fire? Seems to have a little bit of depth and strength. Whereas this other case, which is below two, matches this occluded case on the tone scale, right there below two. Why is it that this strange case over here doesn't have anything on the ball? Pretty irrational. Why? Well, we've got the answer to that. So, this week, I hope that you can pick up this information. It isn't very difficult information. Digest it to your own satisfaction, and with co-auditors around, before you leave Phoenix, test it out. Test out the points as I give them to you. And I hope at the end of this week, you will have the information necessary to do with rather considerable ease what you have hoped or thought I pretended I could do with dynamics. Just this margin, but it requires this. Don't go straining at the credibility of this material until you take a test of it. There are many of you, many, many, many in the field when you say a whole track process, they may say, "Oh, you believe in past lives." Oh, they're not talking about past lives. We're talking about the whole track. Actually, your mess body only has one life. It gets born and it kicks the bucket. And that's that. 80, sometimes less. Much less if you get married or anything like that. So here is your whole track compared to this other track. Your whole track process appears to something that nobody ever processed before because nobody could really locate. And that is the theta body, the actual you, which goes back practically to the beginning of time. That is one track for it. Now, in your messed body, you have one track for it, and it's one lifetime. And what you're deciding when you say, well, it's whole track stuff, I don't believe in that, and here over here is this thing, and messed body, one lifetime, everybody knows you only live once. What you're actually deciding is not whether or not there are past lives. You're deciding whether or not you're processing the theta body or the messed body. You see how it could be? So that those people that are saying, no past track, nothing like that, born only once, they're just arguing from an actual fact, and their conviction is born out of this fact. Their messed body gets conceived, gets born, and dies. And that is the end of it. Somebody shovels it off, $63 cut rate funeral. Everybody goes to the funeral parlor and cries and says there's 97 cents worth of mess. Only they don't say that. They say there's poor old Uncle Joe and he will never be himself again. Well, he sure won't. And then there's this other thing, the theta body. Now, in order to decide which one is important, you have to find out which one has the capabilities. Which is the capable body? Aha, until you found out which and where is the theta body inside the mess body? Is it outside? Is it in Hoboken? Is it completely outside the universe, controlling you by telepathy or something? Well, lots of wild speculations on that. Well, you don't know, you see. So, of course, you can't tie anything to that. And if so, what makes this theta body so forgetful that it takes processing to open up some kind of a past existence for it? Or is it this messed body thing? Well, the people are just arguing as to which one you're supposed to process. Test. Actual test demonstrates that dozens and dozens and dozens of hours spent on the messed body do not produce the same relief mentally that a very few hours spent on the theta body will produce. In other words, between the two, processing the messed body is almost a continual process. This is the process about which Freud would have said and did say in 1922, I believe it was, psychoanalysis terminable and interminable. It was just forever. Now that's why people can put in 5,000 hours on the messed line. Nobody's ever put in 5,000 hours, by the way, since Dianetics was first released, or 1,500 as far as that's concerned. That's a lot of hours. I read in a book by some fellow, that he himself personally, I think he said he'd had about 5,000 hours processing. I figured it up, and I figured out he wouldn't have been able to have gotten off the couch to eat. And been continually in process practically since he first heard of Dianetics. About this many. But now, it's true that a lot of people have run up an awful lot of hours in processing. Well, not too long ago, I was faced with this puzzle, a very definite puzzle. Now, why is it that all of a sudden these people can go on and on and on and on and on, and they keep running incidents, and they aren't getting any better? Well, there were two reasons. One, they were being processed on the messed line only. And two, there was the bug introduced by what is now known as Technique 80, sitting back here, hidden. What you were doing with this poor fellow was taking away all the reason he had for him to have been such a filthy, well, such a human being. You're taking away all of his motivation for all of his cruelties, so he gets worse, 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 worse. He needs these things in his business. He's got to be able to say, well, the reason I pushed Uncle Joe off the second story porch when I was 4 and broke his neck. The reason I did that was because he was so mean to me. Now you come along and you process out all the times his Uncle Joe came, clipped him, kicked him, denied him dinner, quarreled about him. You process out all these reasons, and here sitting there more and more solidly is, you kicked Uncle Joe off the second story porch. And the guy is just getting worse off and worse off and worse off. It's true what they say about me. You know, it's true what they say about me. He says, after a while, I guess I just deserve to have be walked on and trampled on and kicked and upset and generally treated. So you see the difference between these two processes. Now, in all of this research line, I have exercised reasonable care. Some of this information I am turning into your hands without a complete rundown. I'll tell you exactly what information that is. The specific incidents on the track have not been completely explored. So that on many of these incidents, I do not know if they are standard to everyone, because I've had a limited segment of the populace to examine. I don't know if they're standard to everyone. And there are possibly sleepers in there on that track that I haven't discovered. But I will tell you, as I go along, any incident about which there is any question, or if I do not know myself any more than that this incident exists, and I don't know its anatomy. Now, all the rest of this material has been very thoroughly combed, mauled, the technique values, whether or not people could do them, what happened with regard to them. These things have been covered completely. But as I say, the amount of knowledge possible to get from the whole track would probably fill several thousand libraries of Congress. You have enough incident, any one of you, in a whole track past to just fill that many books. And all we're trying to do is find those that are aberrative and those that are standard and those that produce exactly certain things. Now, that's all we want. And in telling you then about the whole track, I'm not going to pretend to you that I know everything there is on the track. And I'm going to tell you very specifically that it is a chart which shows some awfully blank areas. I remember before the war, in an expedition, the Alaskan Radio Experimental Expedition I took up to Alaska, was locating sites for LORAN stations and doing some other odd jobs for the Navy, rewriting some coast pilots. And Alaska is very interestingly mapped. A lot of Alaska is better mapped than the area around Phoenix, probably, because they're aerial surveys. But an awful lot of the coastline of Alaska, due to fog and other things, is unmapped. And I remember pulling out of the chart drawer as I was going along. First, I began to pull them out, and it showed a coastline, ragged coastline line. It showed the land here and the sea, and this ragged coastline. And a little note there, coastline in question, slight, you know. And I progressed further north and began to pull out more charts. And I got down to a set of charts that a dotted line. And it says estimated coastline. That's great, by the way, when you're cruising in fog and 80-mile-an-hour winds come up from nowhere and you're running on a dotted line. A dotted line which contains promontories and crags which are a mile high and the water's a mile deep. You can't tell by soundings or anything. I didn't have any radar. Well, I thought that was bad. So I started pulling out more charts as I went further north. And finally, the charts have blue for sea and tan for shore. And these charts just ran tan, and then the tan got lighter and a little bit bluer. And then the blue got a little bit bluer. Well, Well, now, actually, all I've done for you is take the last chart I described. I found that and drew that up, and I've drawn a dotted line on it. And you're on your own. And what rocks and shoals you hit, why, don't sue me, because I'm telling you in advance, this is survey, pencil sketch, realm, unknown, mind, man, issue 1, 1952. You will see that, by the way, at the middle of the week when your track maps will be available for you. They'll be issued to you. And you can look at this, and it's got nice long lines drawn, and it says this goes from 5 billion to 10 billion years. It's blank. I don't know of a standard incident fits in there, that's all. I know people who have told me of incidents in there, but they're all different. You might find out at that point that you were all horses, for all I know. Now, the course here breaks down then very simply. I'm going to talk to you only about the elements you need in order to process people with Technique 80 and Technique 88. And those processes go together on this line. You have to have a general, overall history of the human race, or of theta bodies. You have to know about what that is. You already know the history of a mess body. That's preconception sometimes, conception, sperm ovum sequence, on up the line. Now, that's the score on it, up to death and so on. You know that span. Well, just as you know that span, you should have some idea of this whole track. Because intents and purposes are what have to be understood about that track. Not just incidents, but what were they trying to do? Why did they want you? Why did your name come up in the hat? And why are you here after that long process? And also, why have you forgotten where you were? So we have to have quite a discussion about that. And it's quite important. The next thing is the anatomy of maybe. You have to know the anatomy of a maybe just cold in order to run any of this. It's simple, but you have to know it instinctively so that you're pre-clear. The second he starts into one, won't drift abroad, because a pre-clear will go into a maybe and then fall off on the motivator justifier side of the maybe and can continue from there on out unless you recognize what he's doing. So you have to know what a maybe is and how it resolves and how complex a maybe should be. So the anatomy of maybe. Now, actually, Technique 80 could be called the anatomy of maybe. Indecision. So. All right. This requires a knowledge of the basic axioms. Just the first few axioms, really all that's necessary to solve this maybe. So we'll cover that. And on Technique 88, we have to know the tone scale of attention units. The behavior of attention units under each position on the tone scale. We have to know that one. Cold, but it's very simple. We have to know that very well. And then we have to cover the method of differentiating between the messed body and the theta body, the method of differentiating. And to be able to differentiate yourself and to be able to get a pre-clear to differentiate between the two. Now, some estimation then has to be covered in addition to that of what's it all about. What possible goal do you have? And we have to go over this because you're going to be asked the question many times by many pre-clears, and you're going to ask the question yourself. I got to solve. What do I do now? Just that. I mean, yeah. Theta body, I've got to just yeah, this is it, and I am it, and I can do this or that. Well, what do I do? Well, what do you do? You go home, or do you go over here and jog Truman's elbow and say, write that bill, bud? What do? Suddenly get mad and people on Earth and mix them up? Or because all of a sudden into your hands is delivered considerable potentialities. Is it safe to leave Earth? Now, isn't it funny for me to be standing here discussing these as practical facts you'll have to know? But they are. They're just as practical as though I were telling you, now look, they got railroad lines, and these railroad lines run from here to Los Angeles. Now, don't get out and lie on the rods. Because you get out and lie on the rods, you're liable to get your hands tired and fall out and be run over, and that'll be the end of you, and that's not the way to ride a railroad train. Good practical suggestion if you've never ridden a railroad train before, isn't it? Another thing is, don't sock the conductor. Another thing is, how do you keep from getting into this jam in the future? Because you're in a mess. Now, it's very funny to be handing this stuff out just though it's ABC, but that's what it is, ABC. And so we have to cover that in this series of lectures. And the material which I've just outlined to you is the material which we will cover. With one addition, I want you to know very well how to use an electropsychometer. Molly Matheson will be here afternoons, for three afternoons, to show you all he knows about electropsychometers. And it's the first time he's ever ventured to that degree. And I'm going to give you some demonstrations on it. I'm not trying to sell electropsychometers. I don't care what you do with it. But it's not safe, really, to process too much on this line without one. Really isn't very safe to do so. We've gotten up to a point of piloting where it's pretty good to have an iron mic to fall back on. This is a big, heavy plane you're piloting. Now, you could pilot through engrams all right without any iron mic, but this other's a little different. Now, I want you to know, in addition to that, how to use symbological processing, because this is the neat one. I want you to know this because I hope at least some of you will take a moment out to go around and get a consulting psychologist here, and maybe a psychiatrist there, and they say, well, we can't use Dianetics. And you say, well, here's something awfully simple, and why don't you try it out? Well, let's get down to business on this. There's a series of tapes on Technique 80 which stress Technique 80. I wish to tell you this about those tapes. Technique 80 includes in those tapes a communications and disintegration technique, two of them, which are actually a little extraneous to Technique 80. We call Technique 80 the to-be or not-to-be technique, which balances out the motivator, the overt act, and the dead. It's the anatomy of maybe. And any way that maybe can be taken apart, any way that you can take apart maybe, any technique you can use to do it, as far as my nomenclature goes, in the future will be called 80. It becomes an entire subject of how to take apart maybe, how to get an indecision, how to get an evolved, grouped series of incidents apart. Any method which does this falls under the category of Technique 80. Now, there may be other tricks. There'll undoubtedly be more improvements on this technique, but we have all of those will be grouped, are grouped, or will be grouped under Technique 80. So when somebody says Technique 80 to you, or somebody says 80 to you, they're talking about taking apart a maybe. Now, the way you take apart a maybe is a very simple thing, and I might as well start right in and give you this thing as simple as it comes. Here is zero. That is not to be. It's the decision not to be. It's the decision nothing. It's the decision not anything. It's the decision of no motion. It is no motion, but zero. Now, you could say that something amounts to zero or infinity, or zero equals infinity, or zero and infinity are the same thing. No, they're not. They're the same order of magnitude. It may sound very funny to you for me to tell you that a zero and an infinity are the same order of magnitude, but they are. But they're not the same thing. It was incorrect to say that zero equals infinity. It doesn't. But zero and infinity are the same order of magnitude. Theta is neither small nor large. It is neither a long time nor a short time. Therefore, it can be zero. It is neither a long time or a short time. It is neither big nor small. Therefore, you could also say with the same accuracy that it could be infinity, because infinity means unlimited. So it could be nothing or unlimited. But there's a difference between zero and infinity. And this is the single difference at the base of thought. It's the basic decision whether to be or not to be, as in Shakespeare's soliloquy in Hamlet. To be. To be is infinity. All the beingness that you can be is an infinity of beingness. That means you could be, theoretically, the whole universe and all the dynamics. That would be infinity. Or you can be nothing. And that would be not to be. That would be not to be. That's zero. Now, every decision ranges between infinity and zero. You have a gradient scale of decision. The problem in processing is how does a person get from high on this scale to low on this scale? And the goal of processing is how to get a person low on this scale to be a person high on this scale. Don't make this mistake. If anyone actually, really, truly became zero, the whole universe would probably collapse. It's just as theoretical as that. If anybody became an absolute zero, that is the ultimate, the universe would cease to exist. Because everybody is, to some degree, an integral part of the universe. And if any part of that universe became an absolute, it would all become. So you see that it's impossible for a person to become absolutely zero. This is very applicable as information. It may not appeal to you at first glance to be applicable information, but it is. It means that no matter how deep apathy becomes, there is always a margin of safety below it. No matter how motionless a person conceives some part of his body to be, there is always a motionlessness more motionless than the motionlessness which he conceives to be feeling. You're always operating then on a margin of safety. You cannot swing a free clear so deeply into apathy, which is motionlessness, that there's no bottom left. In other words, you can't go on processing a pre-clear into chronic apathy from which there is no escape. Unless, of course, you just re-stimulate every apathy engram there is in the entire track, and there he'd be pretty apathetic. But you could even get him out of that with light techniques to bring up the units out of the apathy again, and he's all set. So, get this. A person, a pre-clear, a catatonic skiss, as they are erroneously classically called, is well up from a zero. They have a good margin of safety under them. Now, I tell you, this is important information for this reason. You're going to get into a case, and you're going to find out that by using, or you have already found out to your sorrow, that you have processed, a pre-clear, run effort, run counter effort, run the effort, run the counter effort, run the effort, run the counter. How do you feel now? And instead of saying, hurrah, hurrah, he says, oh. And you say, well, process some more. Counter effort, effort, counter effort, effort. Now get that effort, now get this effort, now get this effort. And you're going to say, how are you? And he says, huh? And you process him some more on that same line. What you're doing is processing him into apathy. Why? Because the toughest incident, the toughest emotion that you can run anywhere on the track happens to be apathy. And as you take off these easier emotions and easier tension unit actions, the easier ones come off, why, gradually you get left this tough one down here. And he keeps not running it. And the next thing you know, why, you've got, to all intents and purposes, a catatonic skit. This has a great deal to do with time, which I will cover in a moment, the scale of time as regards to this. Time, infinity, and time zero. Now, here in apathy, then, the closer a person gets down here into zero, same thing, apathy, zero, death, synonymous, the closer he comes down to that, the less motion he is capable of. The less space he is capable of using, the less actual time he will have. Because you're dealing with motion on this scale to this scale, you see? The component parts of motion are time and space. The change in space of a particle is time. The change of a particle in time is space. This is one of those cat chasing his tail definitions the physicists love. They say, well, now it's very easy to understand because this bolt over here equals this bolt. And they look at you triumphantly because this bolt equals this bolt. Only they don't say bolt. They give you an equation that long with cube root signs over it. And they add those all together and you have a wonderful complex study of physics which winds out to be eventually this absurdity, which unfortunately at this time we have to put up with. Now over here is space zero, space infinity, naturally. And this is thought infinity. And this is thought zero. Same breed of cat. Now you can tell an awful lot by remembering this little picture. This is a simple picture. You can see that motion depends on both space and time. If there is no time involved, I, for instance, couldn't move my hand from here to here. If there was no time involved, I couldn't do that. Why? Because the moment the time my hand is here is earlier than the moment my hand is there. You see that very clearly? And now on space, I can just hold it there, but actually that hand is vibrating. It's vibrating, and it is taking up space. And you see, even though it is completely motionless, time is going on, tickety-tock, 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 tickety-tock. So apparently there is no space component. But if there was no hand there, there is no hand being held there which is not getting no older. That's very simple. If this hand occupied no space, then it could not occupy any time. I could tell you, now there's a hand. Now it's getting older. You wouldn't believe me because it's not true. That's absurd, but that's because the physicists have hung us up with the fact that all there is in the physical universe is space and time equals space, and space equals time, and time equals space because space equals time. And they are the same thing and they're interdependent on each other. The only thing that becomes different then is energy. And energy is a... it's a vibration, it's a motion. and then you say energy is space and time then. No, it's emotion. But emotion is dependent on space and time, you say. It can't exist without space and time. You've got to have space and time in order to have emotion. So therefore, energy is space and time, isn't it? Well, we don't take that up in our textbooks. You'll find out there was a professor in Germany in 1870 who wrote a long equation about this. And nobody's ever been able to solve it, but there's the answer undoubtedly. But after you solve that long equation, you'll find out space equals time because time equals space. In other words, with these two quantities all by themselves, you've got circular reasoning. I'm giving you this for good reason, so that you can estimate the limit of this theory, since it's dependent upon the same body of knowledge which gives you the atom bomb. The atom bomb explodes, but nobody knows really why. Until we add this in, what is holding space and time together? What created space and time? Well, everybody knows that some God worked for 6 days and rested the seventh, and there was a universe already made. Everybody knows this, so I fall back on this as complete and absolute proof of what I'm telling you. It's in writing, and the book that tells about this is America's number one bestseller, the Holy Bible. And it says right there in black and white, so you better believe it. That's as good a proof of it as I've got for anything. You see, I'm afraid I'm just a little bit more honest than some of the boys in what you might call material physics. But we're into physics too. And we're dealing with just a little bit different physics. But I'm telling you what the limit of abstraction is. They never bother to tell you. Right up to here, boys and girls, it's all nonsense. But at this point, it ceases to be nonsense, and we're going to flunk anybody who doesn't consider it complete fact from here on. I'm at least giving you the borderline of where our nonsense is. You see? And that's handy to have. Because as long as you tell people that this is true, and we're going to give you zero on your examination papers unless you admit it's true, you freeze up their thoughts about this whole thing. Well, there's no reason to do that, because I can tell you with complete honesty that it's all nonsense right up to here. And it's all nonsense in the whole science of physics that gives you the atom bomb and electric motors and robots and I don't know whether they... I guess they gave us electric shocks, too. It's all nonsense right up to that point of space, time, and motion. What starts motion? How'd space and time get there? Well, I can give you a theory. And this is a pretty good theory. An interesting theory, anyway. You can laugh and laugh over it. Let's take way back. And here was a thought. You always postulate, see, some new jump-off point, and that fools everybody. And you give that a big name. You say, this new jump-off point, only you'll call it that, you say, this new theory of extrapolation, which has been reduced from the ancient Chaldean wacky-wax, is the Yupwala theory. Now, this Yupwala theory is described in a 150 million word book. And you've got to know all about that before you can understand what I'm saying. But I'm going to tell you it's not necessary for you to read this 150 million word book. I know all that, so you have to take what I'm telling you from here on. No, I'm going to be very honest. When a thought occurred, the first thing that occurred was nothing. That's very simple. Each one of you, by the way, have apparently had this experience. It's apparently an intimate experience. It isn't something that was had by Minerva or Athena or Ra. It was a thought that you had. And you could trace preclears back to this thought. Fascinating thought. They're there and they say, to be. What'll I do about it? And they say, well, here I am. There's nothing else here. To be. I'll make an illusion. Now, let's see. The first illusion I will make is me. Don't buy this engineering attitude that all imagination is the recombination of things you've already known. I'll take that up later in this course. That is strictly Boswise, as they say in the carnivals, for bunk. Imagination can start out whole cloth. Cause can be cause, and it can be cause for anything. And it can be cause for new thoughts. And just because all the writers in Hollywood steal each other's plots, there's no reason all the plots have to be stolen from the writers in Hollywood. Now, therefore, here is the thought. The first thought, of course, is an illusion. Why? There can't be a reality. There can't be a reality for the good and excellent reason there's nobody to agree with you. So it's an illusion. What's reality? That's just something two or three of us have agreed on, and nobody's shaken yet. Now here, a poor, beaten in the head lady by the name of Mary Baker Eddy reached back into time somehow and got hung up in one of these and said, all is illusion. Think right thoughts. Because all is illusion. And from this, by some remarkable extrapolation, she got, man is evil, but God is good, but God is all. I tell you, even Norbert Wiener wouldn't be able to stretch that one around into being a sensible equation. But right up to the point where she says, all is illusion, there is a little speck of truth in that. That there is truth in it is witness to the fact that sitting around all over the place you have Christian Science temples. There must be something there. Well, this one, this little grain here, does compare out. It isn't that all is illusion, but it certainly started that way, evidently, as far as you as an individual are concerned. You personally have had the experience of saying, an illusion. Ha, pretty. Yeah, great. An illusion. What am I doing to get these illusions? Oh, here's space. Otherwise, you see, you wouldn't have any fun making illusions unless you had some shape. You invent shape immediately. You've got to have shape, so you have to have space. So you say, illusions. Very pretty. Illusions. Very pretty. Illusions! By the way, you have had this experience because the fascination with which you will watch a magician, with which you watch a magician giving you these illusions. You say, oh boy, illusions, illusions, illusions. If I were to suddenly say, a big pillar of fire would stand up there, you'd say, gosh, so would I. But your whole problem involved in the fact that there's pleasure in illusion. The most fun you ever had was when you made illusions. When you were a little kid and you ran in and you said, Mama, there's three giraffes and two lions out in the front lawn and I just put them in my wagon. And she said, no. You said, she's crazy. Well, she isn't crazy, but she's down the tone scale to a point where she's all mixed up in a messed universe. She doesn't understand that this is a primary and very vital function, the creation of illusion. As a matter of fact, if you were to depart from this messed universe tomorrow and go out and sit on a pink cloud, you'd probably do that. You'd probably put in a pastime or something of this sort and say... You'd admire it for 100 years or so. Somebody else would come along and you'd say, hey, look. And they'd say, "That's not so good." And it would go, how do you erase an engram? It's interesting that an engram will erase. How does thought, emotion, and effort erase? Well, actually, it erases on the principle of disintegration. You have the power of disintegration. And very, very light, high waves, when they run into messed, heavy waves, disintegrate. That's why your dreams can be invalidated so easily. You run in somebody and you say, "I'm going to write this story, and the hero and heroine is going to be so-and-so-and-so-and-so-and-so-and-so. It's all very flimsy." And they say, "That's not so good. Oh, I knew a fella could do much better than that. Besides, it's all been done before." And you say this, "Where is this illusion, which I just, it was pretty good." Of course, stupidly, you let it stay erased. You say, "He invalidated it, he erased it, so therefore I'm not cause." What you should do immediately, you want to try this the next time somebody pulls these invalidations on you, because that is invalidation on the illusion level of the scale. That's way up here. It just repeats your illusion. Boy, will he go into apathy after a while. You come up and you say, "I'm going to write this story, and it's all this way, and 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 this way." And he says, "Oh, that's all been done before, and I read a story like that in the Saturday Evening Post in 1936. And besides, it couldn't be done so good. And what would you know about writing? You didn't get a major in writing in college, did you?" And after he's gotten through that whole routine, you say, "And the hero and the heroine are going to do this, and they're going to do this, and they're going to do this." And he says, "Well, I've seen that situation before, and there's only 36 dramatic situations, and there are only 8 plots." And you say, at the end of the story, this and this and this happened. He's done. Because this is the basic interpersonal relation. I'm going to show you illusions, and you're going to try to erase them. And I'm going to erase your illusions, but here are my illusions. I'm bigger than you are because I can put these things up there, and you can't erase them. But when you put them up, I can erase them. Oh, you spent thousands, thousands, thousands of yearless years. Timeless years. Evidently, on the track in this process. But what do you do when all the space around you is all full of these shapes? You've made space. You think, and you think, and you think, and you say, independent invention. Brand new invention. Time. Now, what's time? Time is a method of erasing an illusion without giving myself the pain of destroying it. So, what I do is, here's the illusion, then. Here's the illusion, then. That's in then, which now gives you more space, which you can fill all up with illusions, and then you say then to this space. And do you know that you can take a person stuck on the time track? This is quite workable. You can take a person stuck on the time track, and you can just get him to practicing this exercise. It's still innate and still inherent with him that he can make his own time. And you just get him to go on this basis. Now, then, 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 now, then, now, then, now, then. You move on the time track. Sounds incredible, but that's all time is. It's now, and it's now. It's now. Now is then, and here's now, and now. Now is then. Right? It doesn't go out in space. You understand? It just evaporates. It says, "I created it once, so I can recreate it at any time in the future." It's very simple. It's a simple mechanism. So that space and time is based on thought. Thought then, without, when it didn't make any illusions at all, was zero. But the second it started to make illusions, had a tendency to zip and become infinity. And the second it became infinity, it became impossible to think. Why? Because it was senseless. Every thought you thought became an infinity of thought. And in order to think anything that was worth thinking, it had to have a finite shape or size. And so you had to come down from infinity in order to think. You see, that's rather simple. Now you say to yourself, well, here am I, and there's no contest about this. So you say, all right, here I am. There you are. You say, that's me. Only it's somebody else now. And the reason it's somebody else is because of this and this and this. There's different characteristics, and I'm this way, and he's that way. Actually, there's a process by which a person starts in a sort of a thought mitosis. And that underlines all these other mitosis engrams that you try to run. And if you run and can find that earlier when these other ones blow, because a person becomes himself and himself, and he won't be content with that after a while. He'll become himself and himself and himself. And then and himself and himself and himself and himself. He's unlimited. But after a while, he's got to put a stop to this somewhere because he keeps posing puzzles for himself so that he can solve them. And every time he posts a puzzle that he can solve, he wants to solve this puzzle. Why, actually, he's got to post a little bit tougher puzzle. And finally, he'll pose himself posing a puzzle which he can't solve. Then he's happy. But the puzzle gets worse and worse and worse, and other people add to it, and it gets mixed up, and other people add to it, and other people post puzzles which add into this puzzle, and then post other people to be themselves, to be other people, to make more puzzles, to add into this puzzle. And they all look at it and say, an unknown. And so the first matter is born.